Welcome to the Startup Showcase. I'm your host, Scott Catoon, and this is the Technori Podcast live from WGN Radio, where Chicago's top tech founders and entrepreneurs come to share their story. Sitting next to me is a former Technori keynote at Properties co-founder Thad Wong. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So I have to ask, Technori Showcases is this week. It's actually today, but we're recording differently, so we're just going to go ahead and say it's this week. You were a keynote at Technori and got the chance to kind of get in front of the crowd and see the hunger for tech in Chicago. And as a person who obviously owns a company that manages the largest independent real estate broker in the state of Illinois, you've got to have a lot of clients that are working in the tech industry. And I was just curious your take and experience on seeing the growth Chicago has had in the tech industry.
Well, I think over the last 10 years, we've seen strong growth. And I think especially a pivotal point was when Howard Tolman took over 1871. He really put turbo drive into that program, expanded, continued to hire, added new programs. And I think that was a really pivotal point. At the same time, we had our recovery from the Great Recession, and that brought focus back into real estate, especially in and around River North and the downtown area. So I think those two things working together helped out tremendously.
As a real estate person, I always think, for me at least, I came out of a real estate background. I was in commercial real estate when I got out of undergrad before I went to grad school. And I always looked at real estate in the index as sort of a great telltale for me as to know the strength of the city, how quickly it's growing, how fast it's growing, how, the price obviously of stuff and the rent and all these other things are important, but just seeing that it's vibrant and that you see properties continue to be redeveloped and just, new blood brought into areas that maybe like Fulton Market that we didn't really do much with for a while, is a great testament to the overall growth going on in that city. And you're in a great position to sort of tell the story of the last, call it 10 years in Chicago. And you brought up a good point with Howard Tolman, the fact that he pumped a lot of new life into this ecosystem. But I feel like in just the last 3 years, I see new developments and new building projects going up all over the place. And we're just starting to see a lot of those companies that started inside of 1871 and abroad expand into their own space.
Yeah, and almost all of them are sticking around, which is awesome. So it's very cool. And you can see the number of tower cranes that are being added almost, it felt like, on a monthly basis. I think right now it's that part starting to slow down as these buildings deliver. And I think it's a reflection of the demand right now to be as close to the heart of the city as possible. We're seeing fewer families as they grow, move out to the suburbs, more and more people sticking around in the city. We're seeing some of the public elementary schools improving dramatically on the outlying neighborhoods. So I think over the next 15 years, you're going to continue to see a migration back to the city, people wanting to stick around as long as possible. And you've seen the restaurant scene explode. In reality, over the last, not just 3 years, but 5-7 years, Chicago's been undergoing almost a renaissance because every capacity, every aspect of it is continuing to grow. Even office, new office buildings that are going up, that are leasing up quickly.
Yeah, well, and that's the other thing is we're starting to see a different kind of office space building and different kind of use case for buildings in the past. And probably a lot of it has to do with what you just mentioned, which is a lot of people might have a company or might work for a company downtown and then they trek home to the suburbs. And you're seeing a lot more people sticking around here looking for property, which means that all the buildings have to sort of have some sort of lifestyle element to it. There's got to be attractions, things that would make me want to hang out to, whether it's a gym or a rooftop deck or whatever it might be. So you're starting to see these buildings that are popping up. Like I was talking to the guys over at CBRE about across the street from 700 West Chicago with the Tribune stuff. What are they going to put there? Is it a big tech center? Is it going to be there going to be living quarters? Is it going to be shopping? I have no idea, but I'm just super excited to see it. So it's great to have you in here to learn a little bit about your perspective on this. But then there is, of course, the other side of the quarter, which is you're an entrepreneur yourself. You started at Properties. What was it like starting a company, especially in real estate, the time that you started it? What was the economy like as far as the opportunity for you, and what made you crazy enough to go ahead and do it?
It's funny. In 2000, I wasn't married. My business partner wasn't married. Neither of us had any kids, and I don't think we put much thought into it. I think that when we said, hey, let's just set out and do our own thing, we knew enough about the industry that we could get a really good handle on what it was lacking, and that wasn't out of our budget to create. And culturally, we felt like we could create the next generation real estate company. So I don't think there was a lot of trepidation. There wasn't a lot of fear. It was more just opening it, committing to it, and then making the next right decision in growth. And as far as technology at the time in 2000, and you know why we came up with the name At Properties, that is kind of right when, that's the right prior to the tech bubble exploding.
I know. That's why, like, when I look at this, it's like, I'm not a believer in like everything just aligned. Like it's just right. Like there's too much work, and that's disrespectful almost to me to short you on something so creative as At Properties as it was, though, because the branding is perfect. The knowing that there's going to be a change culturally in the way real estate is handled in the future, it's like you knew you knew the recession was coming almost, that there was going to be a big shakeup coming, and you laid the groundwork for people to want to come to you.
Yeah, and prior to the recession, remember, in I think it was April of 2000, we had the great blow up of the tech bubble. Yep. And so everybody looked at that as being depressing. But in reality, what it did is it got everyone to focus on technology. So from 2000 on, after the tech bubble burst, you know, technology was the topic du jour. That's what everyone was focusing on. And it kind of like took that wake up, I think, to get even more people involved.
So how would you say, you know, now you fast forward, let's call it the first 10 years of running the business. You went through the recession, you're handling sort of the ups and downs with everything, and you're coming out now with to the millennials. So now there's a whole new brand of brokers, a whole new brand of business. How has tech itself impacted the way that At Properties runs versus, say, any other brokerage firm or real estate company?
So I think one of the biggest reasons is, or one of the biggest differences is, we built a technology department while we grew the company. So we've got about 15 people in our IT department, probably about 8 coders. And when it came to new products, or even came to a basic CRM, an intranet, or our website, we built them internally. So we wrote all of the code. So one of our big differentiators for agents with At Properties is that it's much more efficient to take a home from contract to close through our in-house proprietary software than it is at a competitor, even a franchise competitor, which you think would be bigger. The problem is they buy off-the-shelf products. Yep. They don't talk to each other. And when there's an improvement, it's very difficult. On our end, we build improvement as we get feedback from our brokers. So building the IT department and coming online, and over the last, you know, over 10 years, you know, building products that make the broker's life much easier, also the home buyer and seller's life much easier. Today, I would say I stopped selling in probably 2002, but I would say a broker has to work 4 times as hard today on a home sale than they did 15 years ago, because every question can be answered. In the old days, somebody could ask a question and you couldn't get the answer, big deal. Now every question can be answered and all information and data can be supplied. So because of that, we've had to make a lot of the back-end systems much more seamless, much faster, and scalable.
Well, I think that this is one of those industries, there's a few of them that, it's funny, but it works this way, where it's almost, technology almost has been a negative impact in some ways, because there's a certain expectation when I ask you questions that you have the answer. Because why wouldn't you? You're the broker. You should know everything. And if you don't know it, it's like, well, what the hell? Like, how do you not know this? And it's only because we're so used to the technology thing where we can just Google search everything. And so it's made it even more difficult. Whereas in the past, it'd be like, I don't know, I'll get back to you. Like, you could get away with that, and now you can't. That is interesting to me. And then I guess, of course, there's the other part of the business, which is the actual business itself. How have you seen sort of a change or shift in the way that people are buying property? You guys are both commercial and non-commercial. So from the non-commercial residential side, what is it about what are you seeing in the millennial face of, like, how do we purchase? Like, I still don't know the answer to that, because I feel like I am a millennial, but I don't prescribe to, like, the usual millennials' behavior. So I was just curious, like, what do you see out there?
Right now, millennials are breaking out their calculator and realizing how much they're spending in rent. Looking at the tax deduction, and now we're starting to sell significantly more to millennials than we were even a year ago. And what has happened is that it's made the selection of the properties to see. Back 10 years ago, you'd go see all of the properties to figure out what you wanted to buy. These days, you don't need to see them all physically.
Yep.
You can look at everything online, from the floor plan, the photos, the video, and you can use Google Earth to understand, and you can use a map locator or a park assist program. You can do so many things to narrow down your focus. And that's helped tremendously, because when a millennial goes to see real estate these days, they're only looking at things that they have a true interest in. That's beneficial to the seller. It's beneficial to the broker. It makes everything significantly more efficient, and it also makes for a much more stabilized market.
So with that, you know, and switching over to commercial on this side, what do you see as like one of the major benefits now for the, like, all of this development is going on and we've got a lot more space to rent. In some cases that makes the rent maybe a little bit cheaper. There's more opportunity for some of us. In other cases that makes it actually more complicated. I feel like, because there's just like expectation that you're supposed to grow and have your own space, and it's gotta be great. And it's co-working space too. And it's gotta be, you know, techie and whatever. What are the trends you're seeing on that side of things?
Well, for the apartments, everything is about the amenities. The apartment itself, the physical housing of the individual has gotten really small. But the buildings are selling themselves and leasing their space based on their amenity, their co-working space, the concierge services.
It's got to be like a little ecosystem.
The life conveniences. But I think what we're finding is that now people are tired of living in tiny spaces, and they're realizing that they can buy something three times as large for less money out of pocket, while simultaneously building equity and hoping for appreciation. So there are a few too many apartment buildings that are coming out of the ground, which will make them a little bit less expensive. And from a resale side, because we had a very long period of time without any new construction, affordable new construction coming online, the resales are very inexpensive. So I think what we're seeing is the new apartment buildings focusing on amenities, but they have for the last 5 years. But I don't think that'll be enough, because I think more and more millennials that are committed to Chicago are buying here, staying here, and investing here.
It's funny you mentioned that, actually, because I think about, man, it was like two years ago, a good number of people I knew of millennials who would be, you know, entrepreneurs, business owners. The part of it, the nice part for renting for them was like, listen, I've got a startup company. I don't know what my finances are going to look like. I may not have enough money to put down. I'm certainly not going to put into a house that I could put into this company or whatever. and then the idea that you could just like cut bait. I mean, obviously they wanted the money, but people would just disappear on their leases left and right. At least you had some sort of freedom there. Now I'm starting to see these guys come back and have serious regrets on that, because you've spent 18 months, whatever it is, living, paying money for nothing. And that doesn't go anywhere. And there was a little while over there, and I'm sure you remember this, after the recession, where things kind of rebounded a little bit. And people like, I'm never going to buy that again. I'm never going to get myself in this situation again. And here, if you look back on it, now they're all changing their tune again, because obviously the rebound has made it to where it's, you know, everything, the world didn't end. Yeah. But more importantly, you start to realize how much money you just pissed down the drain renting.
Yeah, that's the big one. If somebody, you know, it's not rare to find a one bedroom in the River North area at $2,500 a month.
Yep.
So if you think somebody's spending $30,000 a year in rent, that means with taxes, they really are probably earning $40,000 to $45,000. So that's, in a lot of cases, more than half of their income.
Yeah.
And they look at the buying power of that $2,500 a month, even with taxes and assessments.
It's gone.
Get, you know, a place that's two or three times the size. So in all reality, it's a lot more stable to purchase. It's less expensive these days. And for a lot of, it's a nice entree into investment, because these young people oftentimes are not selling this entry-level condo. They're keeping it, renting it out, and, you know, building a portfolio.
Not to mention, you know, maybe doing a little bit of a Band-Aid service on their credit from the school loan side of things.
And you think about it, the Great Recession, you know, when it comes to real estate, it was worse than the Great Depression.
Yeah.
So we saw the biggest whack that real estate has ever seen in America. So the likelihood of that happening, even when we have a cool down and things slow down for a period of time, it will be nothing. It will be a slight haircut in comparison to what we went through already.
And I totally agree. And that was one of the reasons that from my standpoint, working in real estate, when that happened, I worked on nuisance properties. So for me, it was trying to flip nuisance properties, and most of them the commercial strip center type stuff. And I was telling him, like, dude, just keep your shirt on. Like, it's, you know, I understand that you're under a lot of stress now because you're, you know, upside down and a lot of stuff, which sucks. But at the end of the day, it's a resource that disappears. And like any other resource that is scarce, when you have more population and all these things, it's going to keep value. At some point, it will come back. There's no way that you can have a place that's nearest Lake Michigan with all the most population in the state of Illinois, and it's going to lose its value forever. That's just not.
Yeah. If you remember the conversations during the recession, people thought it was going to be 20 years until we saw values back to pre-recession levels. And, you know, we saw in many neighborhoods values back at pre-recession levels in 2014.
Yeah.
So it didn't take that long to get back there, because Chicago is a phenomenal city to live in. It has enormous amenities, and there's a huge amount of demand, and we're seeing job creation here.
Yeah, it's pretty important and pretty impactful. It's great to see the city in this shape. Before I let you out of here, I figured we might as well talk a little bit about your entrepreneurial journey itself. What advice you might have for people who are trying to start their own company, knowing that you got to go through, not that you chose to go through it, but you got to go through starting a company during what ends up being a big boom in real estate, and then it goes through the biggest recession on the planet, and then here we are back where things are looking pretty good and definitely looking up in the city of Chicago. What would be your advice, your experience, sort of your, if you could take the mic and just kind of run with it on your thoughts as an entrepreneur, what would that be?
I think for a lot of people, if they have true confidence in their perspective.
And competence.
Yeah, and they're not afraid to make a mistake. I think what happened in the recession is a lot of people second-guessed their opinions because the recession proved their opinion to be wrong. And I think people underestimated the fact that an opinion can be wrong for a temporary period of time, but that doesn't mean its thesis was off. So depending on the level of commitment that you have to your own perspective and understanding of a market, you should not quickly pivot. But when all the signs and the writing on the wall, don't be afraid to pivot either.
Yeah.
So second guessing yourself is healthy to a certain extreme, but doing it every morning is probably not very productive.
Yeah.
Also, when growing, after you have experienced success in a specific silo and you've generated a good return that's reliable, figuring out other ways that you can grow through horizontal partnerships. So what we do is we take on technology startups that either are consumer facing and have a consumer benefit or efficiency and have a broker benefit, plug them into our program and our engine, feed them marketing, feed them additional technology support, branding, and try to build them while bringing value to both companies. And so that's something that we've had a really good time over the last 5 years. And it's also given us the opportunity to reinvest in Chicago startups and, you know, join that group of people that are really looking to put Chicago on the map from a technology perspective.
I would say, honestly, you can't really state that any better than that. I think that's, we struggle with it. I struggle with it. I know that a lot of the founders have sat in the same chair, have struggled with the fact that they don't know what they don't know. And they're afraid that, like, you know, is that, you're not always going to know the exact next step. You just have to be confident that you have enough intel to make the right step or right choice when that moment comes. And I feel like a lot of us get caught in this little spot where the very second that you're shaken to the core, like, oh my God, I don't know anything. Like, is anything I did right? And you have to, like, sort of compartmentalize a little bit and understand that, like, 3 out of the 5 decisions you made were good, and that should be good enough. Maybe that, hopefully that's good enough.
I agree with you.
Very cool. Thad, this has been great to have you in here. Where do people go to get their next home? Where do people go to find out at Properties?
At Properties, atproperties.com.
As simple as that.
Yeah, that's easy.
That's awesome. Thank you so much, Thad, for coming in.
Anytime.
You can watch this episode and more at technori.com, download the podcast on iTunes, and stay connected by following us on Facebook and Twitter at Technori, or follow me at Katoon. Boom, that's a wrap.